Friday the 13th of March in 2020, I saw my last live music performance. I was at a place called the Fallout Shelter in Norwood.
Okay.
And I was seeing a band whose name was The Restless Age.
The Restless Age.
This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the show shares my conversation with Franklin's state representative, Jeffrey Roy. We had a conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about multiple things, including his indoor riding to prepare for his 19th Pan Mass Challenge, his practices on Thursday night in a modified basis under COVID-19 with the group Ben Gardner's Boat, his outlook for 2021. Of course, we could not avoid discussing the pandemic, vaccine, and the legislature's overview of Governor Baker and the pandemic process. Committee assignment, his recent appointment on the Joint Committee of Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy. And what bills finally did he introduce or reintroduce for this 192nd session of the Great and General Court? Links to Jeff's personal webpage, as well as his legislative page, are included in the show notes. The recording runs around 42 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jeff.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and in the local Franklin area dial at 102.9. Here today with a good session coming up with our representative, Jeff Roy. Jeff, good afternoon and welcome.
Hey, good afternoon. It's certainly great to be here. I'm hoping you're staying well and safe. It's good to see you.
Under the pandemic circumstances, knock on wood, we've been, you know, trying to keep ahead of whatever, you know, keeping in touch, keeping, you know, as my tagline, I think if you saw it from my email, you know, be safe, be social at a distance. That's kind of like the tagline I've been using recently, because social distance is important. From a pandemic perspective, the social part is equally important, right?
Yeah, and you know, we believe it or not, we are coming up on a year
of
the pandemic. I remember distinctly as March 13th, 2020.
Yes. Yeah, Friday the 13th of all things. Yeah. it won't be a Friday this time around.
What stands out in my mind on Friday the 13th of May, Friday the 13th of March in 2020, I saw my last live music performance. I was at a place called the Fallout Shelter in Norwood.
Okay.
And I was seeing a band whose name was The Restless Age.
The Restless Age.
So how was that for, you know,
prophetic? Prophetic, because effectively we've all been restless since then.
and needing fallout shelters.
And needing we barely escaped from our fallout shelter in some cases, right?
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. I think of that and I say, wow, that was amazing. That's the last time I have seen a live musical performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a busy week. We had recorded a session in the TV studio for one of the stormwater info sessions. I didn't stay to the end of it because the Newcomers Club, I was the featured speaker that night. And I think that was the last night they've met in person. Wow. Since then, because yeah, everything shut down that Friday. It's just been, you know, fortunately the vaccine's on the radars, so things are coming. We'll get to that a little bit, but sure. In the meantime, how are you doing?
You know, hanging right in there as far as a pandemic is concerned. You know, I think we've learned a lot about where we can fall short sometimes. In government, and we also learned things that we're doing well, and we also learned that some changes that we have been pushing for a long time are not so bad, including
right.
The use of technology to yes. cover public meetings. We've learned a lot about that process.
Absolutely.
The ability to keep life moving forward and our agendas moving forward. I'm impressed that we have done as well as we have under the circumstances.
Yeah, life certainly has been different. I think for you and some of the other readers may have heard me, listeners may have heard me say before that I retired at the end of September 2019, anticipating to be more active during the day, doing Franklin interviews, et cetera. it seems like I haven't left work because all of the interviews have been done via Zoom and, you know, the Skype equivalent effectively of the work environment. So I was prepared for it to that extent. I was used to this. But yeah, it's not exactly what we were expecting.
No, I never would have anticipated this. And the amazing thing is, for the first time in the 400-year history of the Great and General Court, we are voting remotely and doing our proceedings remotely.
Yes.
And wondered how that would work out. And, you know, it has worked out well. We've been able to completely do our job and pass legislation and keep the wheels of justice moving. But I certainly miss the camaraderie and being together with my colleagues in the State House. That I really miss, and I'm looking forward to getting back to that.
Sure. We'll get into that a little bit more as we go on the kind of our topic list, as we pre-agreed to the general scope of what we're going to cover here. Yep. But back in terms of what you're doing, I know the PanMass Challenge is an annual thing. With the weather, certainly you're not outdoor during the winter, so I assume you're indoor preparing.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm riding several times a week on my bike, which is set up on a Wahoo Kicker trainer. So the back wheels are on a trainer that will, you know, adjust the tension and and you know,
give you some
adjust
resistance.
My speed. My front forks are on a hill climber, which will go up and down depending on what type of terrain I'm traversing. And then I have a fan in front of me that's programmed to my heart rate monitor. So as my heart rate goes up, it blows a lot more air at me. And then I have a big screen TV in front of me, and I get to ride in France, London, New York, Virginia, and a fictional place called Watopia. And I get to do group rides.
Okay.
You know, every Friday morning I do a group ride with some folks locally. And we pick a nice spot, and we get on our bikes and we ride through the country. We stay together as a group. It's remarkable how closely it resembles being out on the road. And, you know, as I approach a hill, it gets tougher to pedal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my bike changes its position.
Right.
My heart rate goes up. So it's the closest experience I've ever had to being outside. But that's the type of training that we have to do. And this will be my 19th year doing the PanMass Challenge. And last year was reimagined, so we really didn't do the massive group ride. But they are committed to getting it back in 2021, albeit it will be somewhat modified. But I will be doing the lengthy group ride this year.
Indeed. Yeah, so I assume while you've at least replicated virtually as much of the training as you can, on the one hand, you probably don't miss kind of the flat tires and the traffic, the fear of the trucks running over you, etc.
It's remarkable. And you know, one of the things that gets frustrating, especially when we do the PMC ride, is when you've got thousands of people out on the road at the same time.
Yeah.
You get stuck in traffic and moving around, and you're nervous about somebody in front of you or clipping you from the back.
Sure.
On a virtual screen, you ride right through those people. They ride right through me.
Yeah. So those little patches of soft sand, you don't have to worry about.
Don't have to worry about it at all. And the cobblestones don't hurt.
That's the best part, because the cobblestones, unless you get the one of those really sophisticated bikes with the, you know, springs and shock absorbers, those are killers.
It's smooth as silk.
Excellent. And I think most of the listeners, if they're true listeners, have been with us for a bit, remember that you're with a band. And if I recall, you know, Thursday night was somewhat, you know, that was your rehearsal night. So what are you doing in this? Can you, obviously you can't get together maybe, or can you?
Well, we did not get together for about, I want to say, 3 or 4 months. And then what we decided to do was to try to get back together. We reconfigured the space.
Okay.
So we're all probably 10 feet apart.
Yep.
We're in the same room, but, you know, we're masked yep. for most of the time.
Sure.
And, you know, we're playing our music and keeping faithful to those rehearsals as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if there's any threat, any member has been exposed
right.
To COVID, you know, we'll immediately cancel the practice. Yep. But, you know, something that's a very grounding opportunity for me to play music with folks that I have been playing music with for around 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping faithful to that has been very hopeful during difficult times. And for that little gap that I wasn't able to get together with the band, I actually did some recording in my basement and produced a CD that I've called The COVID Tapes.
The COVID Tapes.
And if I have not gotten you a copy.
I don't think I've gotten one of those. I've seen some of the outtakes of your recording session that was in the studio.
Yes.
The Franklin TV studios.
Yes. Well, this was done, and here's a copy of the CD, which I will put in the mail to you today.
Okay.
And it's, you know, I took a lot of songs that that I had grown up with and were special to me in one way or another in my life, plus a couple of songs that I had written along the way. And
mm-hmm.
It's 16 songs on a CD, put it together, and was just doing it for fun.
Right.
And, you know, I was listening to them and playing them for some friends, and they said, oh, that would be great on a CD. And I said, good idea. So I put together a CD and affectionately called The COVID Tape. The
COVID Tapes. Yeah, it was similar, right? Reminds me, as I was getting ready to retire, I put together a playlist of kind of work-related, but no longer work-related, if you will. What does the future hold?
Yep.
So, you know, starting off with Monday, you know, what's Monday going to be? This is a new world, et cetera. So, yeah, music certainly does have a grounding point. I agree. So now that you're continuing to exercise, you're grounded with music, what's your outlook for the rest of 2021? Obviously, we'll just take it as a day at a time and as it comes,
yeah.
But any other particular insights you have?
You know, I'm very encouraged by the numbers and the numbers going down in terms of the number of cases,
right?
The number of vaccines being administered going up. We're finally seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. Just how quickly we will get there is still a question that remains out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm extremely hopeful that by the end of 2021, we'll be looking in the rearview mirror. We'll probably still be wearing masks for some time and going into 2022. But that imminent fear, that inability to leave your house, you know, I think is going to slowly go away. And I think people are going to become a little more relaxed and begin to return to somewhat of a new normal. I'm hopeful because, you know, a lot of our restaurants, you know, have held on. They've done well with a takeout business, but some have not done so well. This is hopefully going to be a rejuvenation. I'm encouraged by the fact that a lot of people have taken to the idea of buying local and supporting their local businesses. That's been something that I've found really touching, to see people helping their neighbors by shopping locally. And I've seen a lot of acts of charity and people coming together to help one another. That's been nice. The vaccine rollout hasn't been the most pleasant experience. It's, you know, it's like a chapter out of the Hunger Games. But it, you know, I'm hoping to see some improvement. The legislature is going to have an oversight hearing this week where the governor is going to come and testify in person
mm-hmm.
To address some of the concerns and issues
Correct.
That have come out. We have been jumping on that as a legislature. And I always remind people when they reach out to me, I say, you know, this is a state of emergency. And under a state of an emergency, the governor is given an excessive or an extraordinary amount of power to make decisions.
Sure.
And we have left him with that power because, you know, in an emergency, making decisions by committee is not always the fastest way to get things done. But as we've seen some problems with the rollout, we're stepping up and stepping in, and we're going to improve this because we need to get everybody vaccinated as quickly as possible and as safely as possible and in the most efficient way as possible.
Yeah, and a couple of points there to come back to reinforce, but clearly there was the court case challenging Baker's oversight or executive order legality. And clearly the Supreme Judicial Court found that he was right. The legislature, certainly your house and the Senate, have certainly collaborated to the extent necessary to provide some of the supporting legislation where he couldn't, via fiat, if you will, or executive order, cover some things. You provided the additional coverage, and that collaboration has been beneficial. So yeah, the separation of powers is there, but your oversight role doesn't go away.
Right. No, and we've, you know, we've had to, you know, from my point of view, we've been in touch with the governor. I've probably sent more letters to the governor in the last 6 months than I did in my entire 8 years mm-hmm. as a member of the legislature. Have reached out and had meetings weekly with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, our Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative,
yes,
sprung to life and created the Massachusetts Emergency Response Team for manufacturing mm-hmm. to get PPP developed, to get vaccines developed, and the manufacturing processes rolling. So we have worked in a collaborative fashion, and you know, I will commend the governor. I think he has done a very good job under some very difficult circumstances. He's had his glitches along the way, and that's to be expected. I'm not going to put him down. I'm going to say, you know, it's an extraordinary time, extraordinary circumstances, but we can do better. And working together, we will do better, and we will get this vaccine rollout moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, I don't think the playbook existed for what we should do. And it was clearly redeveloped, piecing together what parts were available and then collectively the best of whatever we could do put together. So yeah, there's some tweaks along the way. Okay.
Yeah.
We're learning as we go and we're adjusting, but
we're not, you know, putting him down or saying that he's horrible.
Doesn't help.
I mean, that doesn't help. Let's see where the glitches are and let's see how we can fix them. And let's move along together. The bright spot for Franklin, a couple of them that I can point out, you know, I've talked long in, you know, we've seen it in the paper and on TV, the success of the Contolo mass manufacturing and making yep. Gowns. But there's another company in Franklin I would really love to highlight for you, and that's
Cold Chain Technologies. It was on the tip of my tongue.
we went to visit, I went with Congressman Auchincloss just last week to take a visit and see what's happening there. Every single Moderna vaccine that's being delivered in the world is packaged in a Cold Chain Technologies
wrapping
box
package
or cooler.
Yep. Yep.
They specialize in packaging that can deliver products in temperatures as low as 70 degrees, negative 70 degrees Celsius.
That's mm-hmm.
incredible processes which were developed here in Franklin
yep.
and being manufactured right here in Franklin. So that's another great example of activity that's going on right here in our own backyard.
Yeah, and that was one of the pieces. Well, I can also reference from my years reporting, there was a town council at one point in time that approved, as I recall correctly, a TIF, a tax incentive. Exactly. To enable Cold Chain to come and locate here. So yeah, not only did they have the foresight to say, hey, let's try and do this in Franklin, but they've continued and we enabled it. And oh, by the way, now they're world renowned to a certain extent within that circle.
Without question. They're all over the place. And, but their main headquarters is right here in Franklin.
Yep. Made in Franklin. So going back to kind of the Shop Franklin piece, certainly that's focus has been picked up in different ways with Shop Local on the Downtown Partnership. The Chamber has been doing its things with Rally Around the Restaurants. And now I think you're aware too, as well, of the United, drawing a blank on the name, the Interfaith Council has now come together to coordinate a calendar so that you go to a particular restaurant on the day of the week. A portion of that restaurant's proceeds, which obviously helps them, but then a portion of that helps the food pantry. Right. So in the trying times, that's probably as good a story as you get. Yep. Fostering the collaboration, fostering the Shop Local, and then helping each other at the same time.
No, it's a beautiful thing. And that's what I've, when I was talking earlier about seeing some great charitable efforts and philanthropic efforts, yep, there's a perfect example of people, you know, using their creativity and coming up with something that, you know, what can we do to help people and make it better? And what a beautiful example.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's been, I've been fortunate, and certainly since I focus on kind of the good news, I'm certainly not going to go with the screaming headlines. That's not my modus operandi. I get to find a lot of those short stories and then share them out. So yeah, it's heartwarming to see that the community has stepped up when they needed to, and let's hope that they continue to do so.
Yep, no question.
So moving along into the legislature, it's also a new legislative year. So I think let's close out on the prior year. You had been doing, because I had the opportunity back even pre-pandemic, going back into the archives. It was beginning of November 2019. You had one of your college trips. I joined you for three schools in Worcester.
Yes.
UMass Med, Quinsigamon, and Worcester State.
Yeah.
And then that legislative work continued, but now that committee has completed, and I think you did bring some legislation through to fruition from that.
Yeah, it was an incredible 2 years chairing the Higher Education Committee. We visited all 29 public schools in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And those meetings actually finished on March 6th of 2020, a week before the pandemic. We started on September 27th of 2019, and it took us about 6 months to get to all 29.
Right.
What that did was gave us a great vision of what's happening on our public campuses. Great, gave me a deeper appreciation for what's happening in our community colleges, and gave me a deeper understanding of just what their needs were. And I'm thrilled to say that as a result of all that effort and all that work, we were able to, even though we were in the middle of a pandemic, we were able to increase the amount of money we spend on public education in Massachusetts. And I was hearing from folks, the presidents of the colleges, please, we know we're facing a 20% cut to our higher education funding. Can you please help us? And, you know, the legislature came through. We level funded all of the budgets for all of our public colleges and universities. And at some of the levels, we were actually able to increase appropriations for performance-based funding programs. We were able to increase by about $15 million the amount of scholarship money that goes out to students. So we really made a commitment financially to our institutions, but also in the face of college closures, we were able to do a financial transparency piece, which was to protect students and parents from the sudden closure of a college or university. That bill was signed into law by the governor on November of 2019. And just a few weeks ago, we completed work on a campus sexual violence bill that has made headlines for the past few years about the amount of sexual violence that takes place on our college campuses. The statistics are alarming. One in five students has reported being a victim of some sort of sexual violence. And we addressed that with a very significant bill that was signed by the governor in January of 2021. Mm-hmm. And from a pandemic standpoint, we went from one legislative session right into the next. Our 191st meeting of the Great and General Court ended on January 5th. Actually, it was January 6th at 4:30 a.m.
Yeah, because you kept past midnight. I remember that part. Yes.
Right. We passed a number of pieces of legislation on the last day of the session. 4:30 mm-hmm. in the morning, we were done. I happened to be in the State House that day. I came home, I got to bed, and I had to get up at 9:30 in the morning. So I had about 4 or 5 hours of sleep because mm-hmm. I was getting sworn in for the next legislative session on Wednesday, January 6th at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I was finally getting ready to take a nap. The ceremony was over at about 1:32 o'clock on Wednesday, January 6th. I said, I'm going to go sit on the couch and watch a little TV.
TV, January 6th.
And I could not believe what I was witnessing. Here I was thinking I was going to get some sleep, but I was absolutely riveted by what was happening.
You weren't the only one.
In Washington, D.C. So, you know, we come right into the next session. And then a few weeks into the session, the Speaker of the House gave me the assignment to take over the chairmanship of the Joint Committee on Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy, mm-hmm. which is an incredibly large assignment. And I dove into a situation where we had a major piece of climate change legislation that was vetoed by the governor in January, and we passed it, the same identical legislation, we passed it in February,
right?
And the governor has sent it back to us with a series of amendments. And when the speaker was telling me about my new assignment, he says, I hope you've been reading about the governor sending back some amendments. I said, yep, I'm all on top of it. He said, that's good, because that's now your problem.
Oh my.
And, so I have been
just been a little bit
chairman,
busy.
Yeah, for 9 days I've been the chairman, and I've been focusing on a major piece of legislation that we have to get finalized. And then the work will begin with the new bills. The filing deadline was February 19th, and about 5,000 bills were filed, and now the clerk's office is sorting them out into the various committees, and I expect to be seeing what are going to become before my committee within the next couple of weeks.
So, yeah.
Ready to roll.
I remember hearing, and certainly the legislation as you had passed it late, and then he got it. Because the session had ended, he had limited choices, as I understand it, in terms of what he could do with the legislation. Effectively, he vetoed it.
Yes.
And by sending it back to you under the new legislative session, now you could make some changes.
Right.
So, yeah, it's people may certainly quibble, but the process is working.
You know, the process is working under extraordinary circumstances. And as I said at the outset of this program, we are getting work done. We are getting legislation accomplished. I heard from a lot of people in particular on the climate change, and they said, well, why did you wait so late in the session?
Hmm.
Now it's fallen apart. And I said, no, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It hasn't fallen apart. We can file it quickly and get this conversation right back on track.
Right.
And that's precisely what we did under the leadership of Speaker Mariano and Senate President Spilka. They were committed to the idea of getting climate change legislation. And that thing is on the verge of being finalized. And I would expect within the next couple of weeks, it'll be back on the governor's desk for a signature.
Mm-hmm. So even mentioning climate change, Texas has some relationship to Massachusetts, even though, you know, we're obviously miles apart. That has affected your role and scope now, too?
It certainly has. And in the phrasing I'm hearing consistently is, we do all this climate change legislation to prevent us from being in a situation like Texas finds itself in. We need to broaden our ability to develop new forms of energy. This year, we're going to be looking at wind farms. We have been at the forefront in the development of solar. And we're in the Northeast, where it's cold all the time.
Right.
And, you know, we've developed the technologies for this energy to work in cold weather.
Right.
That's one thing I would say the folks down in Texas really didn't pay attention to cold weather, thinking it just doesn't happen here. Well, when you've got the dramatic changes in the climate system that is happening these days, you're going to get those types of changes in weather everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be prepared for it. And that's what makes this role as exciting as it is for me.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of challenges because, yeah, back to the kind of the health piece, you know, our individual health will get the business going, but the Earth's health will allow us to continue, period, right? Yeah. So we really have to take care of that as a priority too.
Yeah, and you know, we've set some really, aggressive goals to be at 50% renewable energy by 2030 and 85% mm-hmm. by 2050. That's a very aggressive goal, but the climate change that is taking place requires aggressive goals. And if we do not do this, we are in for some real climate disasters. And all we need to do is look at Texas and say, that's what a climate disaster is. And we have to be prepared to prevent that.
Well, that's just, to be clear, that's just one example of a cold climate disaster. We can look exactly. to, you know, the Amazon burning, yeah. California burning, absolutely. You know, other places with droughts.
Hurricanes.
Weather extremes all around.
Miami is flooding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
well, Boston will flood too.
Boston certainly will flood. I was reading in today's paper about, you know, some are questioning whether it was wise to do all the development we had done mm-hmm. in the seaport, because that is likely oh, yeah. going to be underwater.
Anybody who's visited the federal courthouse at certain times in high tide, you can't walk along the waterfront.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just high tide.
Right. Right. So, you know, we have to be prepared for this. Mm-hmm. We know it's coming. And we have to do whatever we can to preserve this planet for the future generations. And, you know, I take that obligation and responsibility very seriously in my new role. And I'll be looking at these measures over the next 2 years.
Yeah. So to go back to the TUE, telecommunications, utilities, and energy. So telecommunications, that certainly would include like the internet,
cell phones, cable service, you know, streaming services.
Right. All of those.
Which that's a broad spectrum.
We have re-enabled us to do business in the pandemic remotely and virtually and things of that sort. But there is some equity issues with that as well. I'm sure that might be somewhere on your radar.
Absolutely on the radar. And that's something I picked up from the tours of the colleges and universities mm-hmm. to learn that some students out in the western part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts do not have access to broadband internet.
Sure.
And the only way that they could get coverage was to drive their car to their community college and sit in the parking lot to
right.
get Wi-Fi access. Unacceptable in 2021. We need to you know, balance those equities. And the other line that I use with folks, in Massachusetts, Massachusetts is the most highly educated population in the entire United States.
Correct.
And 72% jobs in Massachusetts require some credential beyond a high school diploma. Doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean a bachelor's degree,
right.
but it could mean an associate's degree or some
sort of
industry recognized credential or certificate.
Right.
But as a matter of equity, if we're going to provide opportunities for everybody to participate in this robust economy, we have to provide them with some sort of education beyond a high school diploma. And so that's another piece that we're looking at. And one of the major pieces of legislation I filed along those lines is an act concerning college and high school opportunities. And that's providing early college, a certificate, international baccalaureate, advanced placement, any number of college and high school opportunities for students before they graduate from high school. And that's something I'll be pushing in this legislative session.
So to paraphrase that, I think that's the equivalent of taking like an AP class, but getting college credit for it, or actually taking in some cases a college class and getting credit for it at the high school level.
Or any combination thereof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it, you know, one thing we have seen is that offering early college opportunities to underprivileged and underserved students and communities has increased their interest in college, has gotten them to graduate on time, and has shown them that they can do college work. And of all of the things that have addressed the student, the gap in achievement, mm-hmm. early college has had the most outstanding turnaround for students. Right now, we've only got about 2,800 students participating in early college in the entire Commonwealth of Massachusetts. With the program that I'm pursuing, it's going to reach out to every high school student in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in all 351 communities, because I think that's where we should be headed in 2021.
Yeah, Foster's and I, from my own experience and background in, well, I started in education, but certainly spent an awful lot of time in community in the corporate environment in a variety of tech roles. There's very little that doesn't touch both upon the use of technology, even in, you know, quote, a non-technical environment. But that readiness, and then it gets back to kind of the time, right? So it's no longer just spending X amount of time. If you can start bleeding the time one into the other, it's going to cost less. And the cost of education, especially higher ed, has been also going through the roof. And who knows what the pandemic's going to really do to it as well.
I think the most encouraging things that I saw on those tours going to these colleges were mm-hmm. seeing high school students sitting in community colleges,
yeah.
some who were on track to earn their associate's degree before they earned their high school diploma.
Right.
That blew me away seeing that. And I said, you know, we should provide this opportunity throughout the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I know you probably had to pay for some tuitions in your time. And imagine if you could have saved 2 years of tuition or even 1 year of tuition.
Oh, sure.
Or any of your children. It's yeah. a tremendous savings. And it addresses the student loan crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It also gets more people with some credential beyond a high school diploma. So there's a lot of good in that program, and I'll be pushing that strongly in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. The one, even in back in my day, some of my, because I had taken X amount of classes and in certain areas, then I didn't need to take those in the college course curriculum that I was signing up for. So I was able to do other things. That's one simple advance. And that was many years ago.
Yep.
But even my daughters with their AP classes were able to do something similar. And one daughter was able to take a different set of programs, and through Northeastern with the co-op program was able to extend to the fifth year and still pay for the four because she had the advanced credits. So she got the longer time for less money, which is, to your point, that's effectively what we want to do anyway.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a win-win all around the, everywhere you look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you reintroduced that bill. Are there other bills that you'd like to let folks, know of what you've either introduced or reintroduced?
Sure. I mean, I filed 39 bills. So I would encourage anyone to get out onto the malegislature.gov website.
Yeah,
and
I can, you can see the link.
And get links to them. Yeah. A couple of ones that I think are very interesting to folks. I've got an act establishing a commission on the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. This is something that occurred, and I dare say the revolution was ignited. The flame of liberty was ignited right here in Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, the 250th anniversary is right around the corner. It's
26. Just
Yeah, it's, what's that, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So this is establishing a commission that will begin to decide what programming will be available in Massachusetts. And it also makes us eligible for some federal funding to bring money into Massachusetts to support these programs. I'm also pursuing the Act for Genocide Education in the public schools. That's something I've done previously, and we're gonna bring that back. Another interesting bill is creating an obesity task force and pilot program.
Yeah,
obesity accounts for several types of diseases, and addressing that through a pilot program is something we're going to look for. And finally, of interest would be the establishment of a primary seatbelt law to encourage more people to wear seatbelts. This is a little controversial, but seatbelts save lives. And Massachusetts has one of the lowest rates of seatbelt use in the nation. And we have seen throughout other states in America that when they have made a primary seatbelt law, seatbelt use has gone up, deaths from road collisions have gone down. And I think that's a good way for us to spend some energy over the next 2 years. So I'll be pursuing that. And as I said, there are 39 bills, and I would encourage people to take a peek at some of the things that I have prioritized for.
Yeah, and I believe having been on there once or twice, there's a way to search by legislator. So I could bring that link and share that link in the show notes, assuming that actually works. And I'll check that to confirm.
Fantastic.
The other piece referencing the 250, 2 years later in 2028, will be another celebration for Franklin. And it's 250th.
Yes, indeed.
It was 70-78. Yeah, so,
it's quite a stretch we have coming up here.
It is. So that's where I think picking up on some of the other Franklin themes, building on what we've talked about here. Certainly we need our health, we need our businesses to come back. But then in this post-pandemic world, what's it going to look like? And then, extend it a little bit. What's it going to look like in Boston, Mass, in 250 in for the 250th? And then what's Franklin going to be in 2028? Yeah. Right. The seeds of those can start in the next couple of years. Because while things do move, sometimes they move a little bit slower than others. But they need to start planning now in order for them to happen.
Yep, no question about it. And that's what these bills are all about. And I hope people will get on board and support them, and call up their representatives and senators and urge them to support the bill as well.
Good. Well, thank you for your time today. I'm sure you might have a few other things to get to, since you've got a major committee with multiple topics challenging you there.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I truly appreciate it. Urge anybody, if they have any questions or any issues, please don't hesitate to reach out. We are here. I'm your representative in the State House. And if you have any issues with the state government that you can't get taken care of on your own, don't hesitate to reach out to my office. We'll help you navigate through it all.
Good. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.